The content of this podcast is for informational and educational purposes only. Nothing you hear today constitutes financial, investment, legal, or tax advice. Always consult qualified professionals before making decisions about your business.
What does Red Lobster, Spirit Airlines, and your business hopefully not have in common? Bankruptcy. And today we're going to be talking about ways to avoid insolvency and cash flow. And welcome back for episode 2 of our education series brought to you by SCG Edge, the advisory firm that works with business founders looking towards their exit. And today we're going to be talking about cash flow. Obviously, you know, revenue is the, you know, sexy top line number, but you know, the reality is, you know, cash flow is what really, you know, keeps the foundation of the business solid. So we're going to be talking through a few different things right now. Bankruptcies have been a trend. You got Spirit Airlines recently, and just historically, just based on the numbers, a lot of filings have been taking place the past year or two. So back in 2024, 694 corporate filings, and in 25, a lot of filings as well into 6,500 range. So a lot of that is usually based on, you know, having too much debt, maybe being overlevered as far as, you know what's being constricting towards your cash flow. But there's a lot of you know, issues that could arise, you know, not just from handling debt, but also being too focused on the revenue number and not actually what's being produced on the bottom line. So we're going to take it over over a handful of deals, and Christian's going to talk about the first one.
Yeah. So once again, today we're talking about why cash flow beats revenue. We have our two deals currently here, not deals, but rather companies. First one being Red Lobster. They were at $2 billion in revenue, less than $30 million in cash at filing. They filed a Chapter 11 bankruptcy in May of 2024. I don't know if you guys remember this, but rapper Flavor Flav was big into this. He wanted to help them survive, so he ordered the whole menu. But the rent figure is $190.5 million a year, roughly 10% of revenue. And they had $64 million tied to underperforming locations. Now, Spirit is the other one. I personally was bummed by this one. I love Spirit. I love the travel for cheap. But Spirit was $4.9 billion 2024 revenue. They had $758 million operating cash burn. They ceased operations May 2nd of 2026. It was a 34-year-old airline. And I can tell that a lot of people remember that one. But really, we'll kind of do a quick macro level look at this, but there's been 694 corporate bankruptcies in 2024. That's the highest since, you know, 2010, beating even the 2020 638 COVID filings. So,
yeah, and the key thing there was really just, you know, lot, like I mentioned at the beginning, a lot of debt being a little too constricting towards your, you know, reaching into solvency issues just based on the capital structure of just being too overlevered with debt. You're restricting the amount of cash you can actually get from your operations and you know, reaching profitability. So in the instance of Red Lobster, you know, back in 2014, Golden Gate Capital had bought them and had done what's called a ground sale lease back, where they had sold all their real estate holdings and leased them back to Red Lobster. And obviously that provides a nice cash bump for the private equity firm in the, you know, beginning. But when you strip the assets like that, you eventually can come into some issues in terms of, you know, your leases being a little bit too unwieldy to handle. Obviously, you know, the trend towards that, your Red Lobster style restaurant was kind of getting out of you know, favor, so to speak. So there was a lot of issues there when we had brought this new CEO Jonathan Tybus back in a few years ago. You know, he had a big corporate, you know, rebrand refresh mentality and a lot of capital expenditures going into you know, rebuilding out the stores, remodeling them, and it hasn't quite taken off. So it has led to some cash flow issues for Red Lobster. You know, but in terms of the rent side, you're looking at $190 million a year was owed, whether the dining rooms are being utilized or not. So big fixed overhead expense. You know, it's no longer being owned by, you know, Red Lobster corporate. You know, now this was mm-hmm. You know, the real estate was sold off to a separate entity, and now you're, you know, paying a landlord a steep rent every year. And you're paying for that regardless of whether or not you have, you know, a lot of, you know, foot traffic coming in the door.
Yeah, I mean, I have some notes here. They said that the guest traffic fell around 30% from its 2019 peak, and it never really recovered. But a lot of people think that the endless shrimp was actually the killer to this, and that was kind of painted as the scapegoat. but actually rent was the killer, such as what Steven said, because the Endless Shrimp deal at $20 drove roughly $11 million in loss. But it rebounded in air against a $2 billion business. The CEO even said that the promotion didn't kill him, the cost structure did. So, you know, by 2023, they stopped paying small vendors. A lawn care company owed, you know, roughly $5,000. A carpet cleaner had 10 invoices running 100 days past due. A $2 billion company stiffing a landscaper is the clearest early warning sign that there possibly ever was. So it's kind of interesting to see how they kind of had to back a lot of these things, but it really wasn't the deals that their own offerings, I should say, that killed them.
Yeah. And on the flip side of that, you know, you had mentioned some of those smaller vendors being, you know, stiffed. And that's something to keep in mind, especially for our smaller business owners. You know, if you're working with a large corporate, you know, operation, you know, it's good to, you know, be, you know, aware of some of these companies that may be going through some of these financial troubles, because, you know, you're likely going to be the first on the chopping block as far as, you know, being delayed payments. So always good to, you know, be mindful of, you know, as we talk about vendor and customer relations, you know, when you're a vendor towards a large company, you know, just making sure that, you know, you're not letting those types of, you know, receivables get, you know, too far ahead of yourself. So, you know, as Christian mentioned, you know, those are the contractors that they're going to try to delay payment. You know, a lot of times, you know, the real estate has, you know, the lease has to get paid, you know, X, Y, and Z has to be paid. Their food vendors obviously need to be paid, which, you know, they have, you know, large corporate accounts for that. But when it comes to the, you know, the local, you know, services that are needed on a more local basis, you know, the cleaning companies, the landscapers, those sorts of things, maybe a plumber, electrician, you know, those are the ones they're going to, you know, those are very fragmented. They may have, you know, district or regional, contractors that help, you know, on a location by location basis. And those are going to be the first ones you really start seeing them withholding payment from. And that's going to be, you know, a telltale sign, especially if you're a small business owner looking at that, you know, an invoice that normally got paid in 30 days, you know, if that's getting stretched out to 60 to 90 days, you know, is this a customer that I, you know, a lot of times that's why we talk about your customer, you know, differentiation and not having too much of a customer concentration into one particular account. Obviously, you know, if you were, you know, back in 2014, if you had a Red Lobster as a client, if you're a commercial cleaner, a landscaper, you know, that probably, you know, looked really good and you're nice large account for you. But if you were, you know, letting that become too much of your business, you know, that can turn into, you know, a bit of a risk too, because, you know, as we saw here, you know, they start, you know, stiffing you on payment or really start, you know, dragging you along and making those 30-day invoices turn into 90-plus day invoices before they can get them paid. Those are the things that are going to go as they try to stretch out every last dollar of cash flow before getting those paid. So something to keep in mind as we try to, you know, translate this down to more of a small business owner focus. But again, it's nice to be able to, you know, be in control of your own, you know, destiny. Sometimes that is, you know, with real estate, you know, if you own your own location, especially if it's something you, you know, that's critical to your business. Obviously with restaurants that can easily be the case of, you know, location can be super important towards your foot traffic and overall, you know, profitability. You know, if you're in a position where you can own the underlying real estate where you're operating from, it's usually a, you know, a safe bet and keeps, you know, helps de-risk things. You're in control of your rent, which is obviously one of the largest items of overhead. And we talk about, you know, your
rent, labor,
your profit statement, rent, labor. And depending on the circumstances, you know, based on your business model, you know, it could be other aspects too, but rent and labor are usually, you're going to be your top two, right?
Yeah. And it's actually pretty interesting too about this is they actually hired a 35-year-old CEO. His name is Demola. He actually came from P.F. Chang's and is now actually the youngest CEO in the chain's history and is betting on a huge turnaround plus the nostalgia aspect of it. But here's a kind of a little cash flow kicker here for you. Even post-bankruptcy, Red Lobster has lost money in four of its last five quarters. And the 2025 sales are still below, or 20% or more below the pre-bankruptcy levels. And Demola said that more locations are probably going to close. So the point for operators such as yourself, you know, wiping out the debt doesn't fix the cash engine. You still have to earn it back at like the operating line.
Well, we'll get back into kind of smaller scale applications for our small business owners, but let's dive into Spirit Airlines briefly. That's been a little bit more of a recent bankruptcy filing. Obviously, we know
Still tough to talk about.
Yeah. Obviously, it was the largest, you know, value or low cost, you know, airline. You know, they highly competitive on price. That was basically their, you know, through line throughout the company was, you know, very cheap fares and, you know, try to make up, you know, some profitability on, you know, the add-ons and your checked-in baggage, whatever. But the, you know, the, you know, yeah, ticket price, you know, the thing that they're, you know, when people start, you know, price shopping, you know, that's always going to be, you know, the lowest fare typically for the routes that they did. So competing only on price, you know, a bit of a mode, but it's not really a mode because it's really just a race to zero in terms of, you know, overall, you know, profitability. You know, airlines are, you know, notorious for being, you know, super capital intensive, very low profitability. And with no pricing power, it's difficult to, you know, pass rising costs. And, you know, we saw a lot of the issue with some of these airlines was not fixing their fuel prices. So once, you know, we had the Iran issue happen, you know, oil prices start going through the roof. That obviously translates to, you know, the various fuels and particularly the, you know, you know, the jet fuel prices. So that turns into, you know, what is a very high expense for these airlines, something that, you know, instead of price fixing them with, you're hedging them with contracts, futures contracts, you're basically, you know, hitting this huge spike in fuel costs, which, you know, pretty much led to Spirit's demise, right?
Mm-hmm. And they, you know, they've been operating at a loss every year from 2020 to 2024. You know, their revenue kept growing, they kept getting new routes, they had more planes, but the, you know, operating line was still bleeding. Growth was masking the disease. It was not curing it, as I like to say. But the 24 line, they had like 758 in negative operating cash flow on a $4.9 billion revenue. And that is about 15% of revenue vaporizing at the operating line, alongside a $1.2 billion net loss and a negative 22.5% operating margin. So like as Steven said, you're competing only on price. You're not really building something that's going to be a little bit lasting and that's going to bring you some more, you know, cash flowing items. And, you know, while revenue is great, whenever you have these giant fuel moves, it's just going to absolutely kill you at the end of the day because you're almost fighting like a, you know, kind of a net zero gain or a zero margin, or it's at least a race to it. But I know they filed it officially in November, and then they filed a second time in August of 2025, then began an orderly wind down on May 2nd of this past year, or this year, I should say, after a last-ditch effort for roughly $500 million in federal support. That didn't come through. So a Middle Eastern-driven fuel spike was the absolute final domino, essentially.
Yeah, so, you know, it was definitely trending in the wrong direction. You know, this bankruptcy had, you know, been filed, you know, back in 2024. And you know, the Iran, you know, war was basically a straw that broke the camel's back as far as its viability was concerned. But, you know, the stock market, and I wouldn't say the stock market, but, you know, if you're growing, obviously, you know, someone, you know, the investors in this case, you know, if we're talking a publicly traded company, you know, they're willing to, you know, see where that goes, you know, as long as you're growing properly. Obviously, you know, there's plenty of publicly traded companies that show negative profitability, but because their growth is strong, investors are willing to, you know, take the growth with the, you know, negative earnings during that period. And hopefully you get to a point where you can, you know, kind of pivot your direction from growth into profitability. But again, you're breaching a point where, you know, it's very hard to endure without having, you know, something other than just being a low cost, you know, provider, especially in a very, you know, low profitability environment, you know, in this industry as it is. And then you get hit with a large spike in fuel and all of a sudden it, you know, basically vaporizes the company. So it's, you know, again, you know, I know, you know, if we're going to translate it back down to, you know, small businesses, I've had, you know, a trucking business, you know, back when, you know, I think it was 2019 when the Ukraine war happened, we saw that was kind of an initial spike of diesel. Obviously it's really high now, too, but the, you know, something that had been, you know, somewhat of an afterthought all of a sudden becomes, you know, a large part of my attention. Are we getting, you know, being a lot more mindful of, you know, where we're getting our fuel, how we're getting out is more in line or more in tune of, okay, am I getting our diesel from this location or that location every time I can, you know, save
But I mean, we're also not saying that the fuel spike didn't cause the downfall of Spirit, though. You know, their revenue peaked and fell. 29% in 2 years. The last quarter of operations was around $250 million versus its $1.4 billion at peak. Once the, you know, negative $1.4 billion a quarter business shrank, it fell. So revenue was there for the whole way down, but the cash flow wasn't, and it wasn't entirely on the, the fuel spike. It just kind of was the final blow. But I was actually kind of curious. I don't know your thoughts on this. Do we know who actually, what happened with the Spirit asset purchase? So those group of gang of people that tried to buy Spirit ever come through, or did they not?
Yeah, I think that's still, being
determined.
Yeah, litigated or determined. Yeah. There was an opportunity for JetBlue to buy it back. I think it was shortly into their initial filing. I think the FTC had blocked it. And
I know Delta wanted to buy something from them. But anyway, before we get too off track, we'll talk about the kind of how Spirit goes with your business. So, so are you growing revenue without checking what it costs to generate it? Meaning growth that burns cash faster than it creates isn't really growth. It's acceleration towards a wall. So if you're spending more than you're actually bringing in, it's never good.
Yeah. And that's, that goes down to, unit economics. If you're, if you're selling, a widget, some sort of, or, some sort of service or product, and it costs, X dollars to make it, your overhead on a, spread out over, the units or services it takes to produce it, you're able to try to break out, what it costs on a per unit basis. So that's usually a good way. And this might be a conversation or a discussion on a future episode, but really trying to understand, what the unit economics of your company is. And that's going to be a really good way to understand your profitability. But if you're spending more than it costs to get that additional sale, obviously you're, in a negative cash situation. And, that growth is great. But if you are, doing it, obviously with venture and some of these really high growth companies, there is, Uber being a big example, going really big into the negative as they try to grow market share. But, most of the small companies we're talking about, you may be high growth, but you still need to be mindful of those, unit economics as far as, for each, marginal or additional sale, is this driving, not just revenue, but profitability, more particularly, to my bottom line, and is it, turning into cash flow? So
it's kind of like Walmart, wouldn't you say? Like, Walmart couldn't always start at being the cheapest. They had to grow their way and make sure their cash flows are stable enough to get to that point where they could start introducing different supply chains, different homemade items to actually get to that point where they could be the cheapest. And I guess you could say kind of the same thing as Amazon, because you always can't be offering something that's the cheapest. So it's important that when you actually look at what offers or services or any sort of business items that you are currently doing, that your price is actually locked in so that you could, survive these sort of tailwinds or these down periods, or, whenever somebody pushes back on price. Which brings us to our next one, which is, do you have pricing power? Meaning, if your biggest customer pushed back on price tomorrow, could you hold the line? I tell you what, Spirit couldn't. When costs rose, they had no way to pass them on.
Yeah. And that's always a big one. And it's, we talked about the customer concentration earlier, but just even your customers in general, how steadfast can you be on your pricing? Or, are you being a little too willing to maybe, reduce your pricing in order to get that additional sale? And, for a lot of different types of business models, it could vary. But, generally, if you know what your pricing is, it's usually good to, stay on that track and not get into this, habit of, being lax on price, even if it gives you that additional sale, because eventually that can erode into your overall profitability.
And the last one is, what does your cash flow look like if you remove your top three customers? So we've, I think, spoken about this before in other webinars and other segments, but if the answer is scary, your revenue is more fragile than it looks, concentration risk is a cash flow risk. And let's say you are at the kind of tail end of your business career, or you're retired, or you're close to retirement and you want to sell your business, a lot of equity groups or whoever may come in to look at your business. But if they see, like 30% of your revenue or income is coming from, like two clients, then that's not going to look like you have a pretty good diversified, portfolio of clients or customers. And so that actually could hurt you within your valuation. And actually, at the same time, it also could hurt you as a business owner in the meantime. So it's always good to look to find other clients and new ways of picking up business, or even some larger accounts if you can.
Yeah, and a good rule of thumb is typically the 20% is that threshold for any given customer making up your sales. That's usually going to get flagged. Now, obviously, if you had an anchor customer and that's been a even if it's been one of your higher value, longer tenured customers, ultimately that is going to be a risk you still need to try to mitigate by growing either your other accounts to basically reduce that because if you can grow your sales through other channels or other customers, that obviously will bring the overall percentage of that large customer down as it of its makeup of sales. So something you need to be mindful of as you look to sell, again 20% being kind of that big big threshold, and working around that, because most investors, when you look at those types of businesses, a customer that's making up 15% of your sales, if that disappeared, it would hurt a lot, but it wouldn't really impact the overall survivability of the company. But obviously, once you get to that 20%, if that 20% of sales gets reduced, you're really fighting for your life at that point. So obviously, a fine line. You don't want to lose any, big customers, even at the 10% range, but that's survivable. 20% and beyond, that becomes,
a little harder to justify.
Yeah.
But, I guess we'll move on to the next one. We have, 5 cash flow rules every operator needs. So this is for you guys. So I hope you guys can take some notes here. But the first one is, know your cash position every week. So revenue is lagging, cash is real time, weekly cash review is non-negotiable. Number 2 is, know your fixed costs, cold, rent, payroll, debt services. What do you owe every month, regardless of revenue? That's your floor. The third one is shorten your cash conversion cycle, invoice faster, collect faster. Every day you wait to collect is a day you are financing your customer. Keep real cash in reserve. So 60 to 90 days of operating expenses in actual cash. Your credit line is not a reserve. It's debt you haven't drawn yet. It's for our our listening audience, but we do have a YouTube up where you guys can actually see these slides that we have up with us. But each one of these, I think, is pretty important to know. Know your cash position every week. I think that's just something that a habit that every business owner needs to get into looking at, kind of your week review. So it kind of knows where you know where you're sitting, at least going into each week, and what you need to tweak and what you need to fix. It's just kind of a good practice to build overall, because if you don't know where you are, you don't know what needs to be fixed. And by the time that happens, then you're going to be in a little bit of trouble here. If you don't know what your fixed costs are, that's also going to be an issue. These are all items you really need to know off the top of your head, at least every week, at a minimum, I should say, every week. Because if you don't know these, then you don't know where you are and you're lost once again at sea. But I mean, if you don't know what your rent is, your payroll, or your debt service, you don't know how much you owe. So you don't know how much you need to make in order to continue or to grow at certain rates. And then you need to, shorten your cash conversion cycle. So I know a lot of physicians or, physical therapy practices, like we're dealing with one right now that was having issues with this. They weren't collecting on time. And, we talked to them about it and we're saying, well, why aren't you, charging people as soon as they, are there and they've done their first therapy session? Because they were waiting, I don't know what, like 48 hours, sometimes a week, sometimes 2 weeks before they were actually getting paid.
Yeah. And, a lot of this, you can only control what you can control. But as far as the, cash conversion cycle, if you have a billing person in your, office, is there a backlog? Is there, are there systems you can optimize to help you turn around those invoices faster? Because even the difference of, a half a week can, mean a lot towards your overall, working capital. That's more money that's working for you, getting into your company sooner. Because if a company's out there waiting for you to send that invoice and you haven't gotten it out for maybe even up to a week, there's something there that you can control. Where if you can have a better setup system and processes in place to get those invoices out, basically, ideally as soon as that service was completed, or product was sold, whatever the case may be, get that to a point, because you want to, one other thing that investors will look at is, day sales outstanding, days receivable outstanding, net working capital. Those are all things that are going to you know, companies will be looking at as far as they, you know, the analysis of your cash flow and cash conversion cycle. So important to control what you can control there. Obviously, some, you know, businesses, you know, it's a set, you know, net 30 terms, you know, for, you know, commercial client that is coming in. But again, you know, a lot of, sometimes that timer doesn't really kick in for them until they receive the invoice. So again, yeah, the sooner you can get it out to them, the sooner that gets, you know, better addressed on your end. And then as far as cash from reserve, you know, we talk about this in personal finance stuff too. It's always good to have, you know, that rainy day fund, that nest egg, something that is able to, you know, again, if you were to drop, you know, a large customer, making sure you have enough cash to meet responsibilities as mm-hmm. you know, work to try to, you know, figure out your sales and filling that gap for the next, you know, 90 days, ideally. So having, you know, that cash in reserve to help manage those operational expenses can really help when you get into some of those crunches. And again, I mean, cash flow, the lack of cash flow and bottom line is going to be, you know, the difference between a company that succeeds and a company that can fail, because it doesn't take a whole lot for a small business to get, you know, into a predicament on the cash side, where a company that otherwise is well respected and well appreciated within its community can easily go bust if it's not managing its cash properly. So, you know, this is obviously another super critical element of, you know, managing a business, is making sure you're preventing those cash issues from arising in the event of a downturn.
Yeah, I mean, think about it like your personal finances, right? So you have your checking account and you have your reserve, your savings account, essentially. You want that savings account to be, you know, nice and pretty, just in case if you have a downturn, you get injured, you lose your job, whatever it may be. It's the same thing as those. And we got some questions for you, Hugh. For the listening audience, once again, I'll read them out to you. Five questions every operator should answer. Question number one, if every customer paid you 90 days late, could you still make payroll? Question number two is, how many days of cash do you have right now without drawing a line of credit? Number three, what's your largest fixed cost and how does revenue need to be just to cover it? Number four, have you ever confused a big revenue month with a healthy business? And number five, if your top customer paused for 60 days, what happens to your cash? So once again, we would like for you guys to ask yourselves these, because these that we find are pretty important questions. And this is some of the stuff too that, you know, equity buyers or investors will be actually looking for. And these would be some of their due diligence questions, because they're going to, you know, go through your business pretty thorough to make sure that everything is as you say it is. So these will also help you improve to see kind of where you are standing currently, and gives you an overall checkup on how the actual business is running. So if your customer paid you 90 days late, could he make payroll? If you can, that's good. If you can't, then you need to know, you need to adjust some things. How many days of cash do you have right now without drawing on a credit line? Once again, this would kind of look at this as similar to a burn rate. What's your largest fixed cost and what does revenue need to be to just cover it? So for instance, if your biggest cost is your labor or your rent, then you need to know what your price needs to be to cover it on X amount of units if you're selling individuals. Or if it's just a service base, then, you know, you have to factor that in, because without that, you wouldn't be able to actually run a business similar to what, like Red Lobster, right? What we just said. so no $20 unlimited shrimp. Have you ever confused big revenue month with a healthy business? So for instance, these are the lagging ones. So if you're not charging and getting these payments in, or these invoices paid, or you have delayed accounts receivables, you think, you know, looking back on the months, if you're looking back on your P&Ls or your balance sheets, you could see that you had like a really good June, but realistically, and you had a really bad, you know, May. Well, you could actually sold that in May and actually didn't get paid for your services until June. So you kind of can't see exactly where you're lagging and where you're falling behind, if that makes sense. And
yeah, and we had, you know, we had talked to an HVAC company the other day, and they, you know, sometimes you'll see businesses where, you know, it's like, oh, my guys were really busy this month, we're really busy, but they realize it wasn't a big revenue month. And sometimes it's a revenue recognition issue, but sometimes you can't necessarily, you know, mix or conflate, you know, something that's, you know, it's like, oh, we're really busy. Well, did that, was that a production of revenue, or was that something that, we'll cut that out, but,
just start with the HVAC business.
Yeah. But yeah, for example, we have an HVAC, guy that we've talked to where, you know, he could be really busy but not necessarily know how that's translating to revenue. And on other times it can seem slow, but the revenue is actually there. And sometimes that's revenue recognition. You know, if you take on a big project, you've, you know, put steps towards that. You may have been, you've kept really busy, but that revenue is not recognized until maybe the project is fully completed. And so in that case, you could have had a really big revenue month, but all that work was really done the previous month. And you may have been not really working a whole lot that, you know, that month that the revenue was recognized. So it's good to kind of understand the mechanics between, you know, where your revenue is recognized, how that translates to your, you know, core operations and your technicians or, you know, laborers, whoever that might be. You know, not confusing, oh, we were really busy with, oh, you know, that necessarily means we have a really strong, healthy business. So again, it goes back to, you know, making sure that, you know, cash flow is there, that revenue obviously looks really nice, but beyond just the core operations, am I making sure that these things are collected? And another thing that's not mentioned on here, but also just making sure that, you know, if you don't have a process in place yet of keeping on tabs of your receivables, you know, make sure that that's, you know, a critical part of your business as well. You know, a lot of times, you know, it might be a weekly, biweekly thing. You definitely want to do it at least biweekly, where you're keeping on tabs of, you know, your largest outstanding receivables. That could be that large, you know, commercial landscaping client. You know, if you're doing red lobster, you're saying like, you need to be seeing that, oh, that 30-day invoice is now gone to 60 days. And
why aren't you paying me red lobster?
So you want to make sure that you're staying on top of not only your receivables in general, but also making sure you're paying special attention to, you know, anything that's beyond, you know, 30 days, if that's out of the norm for your company, making sure you have a follow-up process in place for those aged receivables, and then also keeping, you know, paying careful attention to the really large outsized receivables as well, and making sure that, you know, those aren't aging in a unnatural course.
Yeah, and the last one is, if your top customer paused for 60 days, what happens to your cash? Once again, that's talking about that customer concentration issue. You don't want to be too heavily reliant upon one client. That's what people will start to notice, because, you know, if you pull, you know, think about it as a tower of cards, right? And if I pull 30% away from that tower of cards, the, you know, the structure is going to fall, you know, the business will fail. So it's always good to make sure that, you know, your customers, you can have a top customer, that's fine, but as long as you're, you know, fulfilling, if they don't pay you, or if something were to happen where you lose a contract or whatever, that you can, you know, last or weather the storm a little bit before finding that next client. You don't want to be totally reliant upon just servicing them. You want to be able to have enough cash on hand, enough rainy day fund, so to speak, to keep you moving. And so I think that is the last of our podcast. So once again, thank you for coming to Education Part 3, where we say that, you know, revenue is just the headline and cash is the truth.